welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard, and today we have part two of the interview with Zacharias. Jack and I pick up right where we left off, and we get more into the state of the market, how he looks at things, versus just his story and how he got into all of this. I think that you'll really enjoy it. We did get great feedback on part one, and part two should be just as informative. Hey, if you like this show, thanks to our partner for supporting it. That's Delta, the portfolio app. You can track all things about your portfolio using Delta. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta to learn more about it. Since the last episode, they've released a new version, which is fantastic, and it includes the My Delta link. So now you can create a socially shareable version of your Delta portfolio app and send exactly what you've got in your portfolio to friends and family, and they can track that out and set some accountability. Really slick. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta to learn more about that and them. And thanks to Delta for being a Ledger Status partner. Now here's the show. There's a moment in time that I'm thinking of, and it brings up a question to me about the trend is your friend, right? So the trend is your friend. I've discovered two things, and I want to get your take on. One is that I always anticipated going into late last year that, and there's evidence of that, of my thoughts on this podcast, that capturing 80% of the trend would be possible. Like, I wasn't sure I'd catch 80% of the trend, but I felt like I'll be able to identify when we have a top, and I'll be able to get out and protect myself. And I realized that that was a lot harder to do than I anticipated. And then additionally, there are times where instead of riding the trend and waiting for confirmation of the trend, like I found myself incredibly bullish or incredibly bearish at what was either a bottom or a top. And I want to get your take on that, because there was a time in April where the two of us and some others, but the two of us were looking at what was roughly a bottom and were just extremely bullish. And I'm not sure if our risk management was there or not, but we definitely weren't treating the trend as our friend. So how do you balance those things, playing the trends versus trying to call reversals?
That's always been one of my greater weaknesses, is I have a propensity to try and call those reversals, which will burn you more times than not, I think.
So we got lucky that time.
You know, that time I wasn't trying to call it on 100x leverage either. I wasn't trying to call it by grabbing a parabolic knife that was cutting down. You know, that consolidated nicely for a while, and we were able to scale into those positions using responsible or almost responsible amounts of leverage and position sizing. I think that's perfectly fine to do. It's the, okay, we're down $500 today, still going down. Surely this is as low as we go, and jumping into the high leverage position. That's what'll end up wiping out an account and wiping out a trader. Once again, with people at, you know, we went from 6,000 to 11K, dipped to 9, we're back at 11. A lot of people shorted that 11. I guess they're looking at the overall longer term trend, that double top. Mm-hmm. But did quite well. The thing I like about trading reversals like that is you can use a reasonably tight stop. They are on that double top, or where we were buying in April at 6K. Mm-hmm. It was going to be pretty obvious if we broke down there. So I was able to use a pretty large position and be comfortable in the fact that we were close enough to the bottom. If we broke that, my loss wouldn't be that big. I don't remember who said it. It was either on Twitter or in one of the trading books I read, but someone once said that the best positions are the ones that are closest to being wrong without being wrong, or the best entries are ones that are closest to being wrong without being wrong. Mm. So grinding along that bottom at 6K, I really, really liked that entry. And it was nice having you and a couple other good traders I respect confirm that as well. So.
Yeah, and I agree with you. The way I was looking at that one is, look, if we break down, it's going to be with some velocity, and it'll be painful, like depending on the position size in that trade, but then you're out, you know, like you're not questioning it for a long time. And the other thing we had there was an incredible amount of sentiment. Like where you could counter trade some of that sentiment. Like people were so bearish. It was one of the few times where I saw shorts significantly outpacing longs.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit different than what we've got now, even though we're in a similar price range. So is there anything special that you do to adjust your outlook on those scenarios?
Yeah, so I mentioned I did buy some here in the mid 6Ks, and I'm cautiously optimistic that we've at least created a local bottom, but I'm not nearly as confident as I was back in April. Mm-hmm. Like you said, back then the sentiment was super bearish. Shorts were considerably higher than longs, and that was the first touch of that previous support zone. Mm-hmm. Now we had a lower high bounce up to just below 10K, have come back down to that and are grinding at it. Shorts aren't way higher than longs right now.
Right.
So I'm not as confident, and my position sizing reflects that as well. I am in, and I am looking for a move higher, but I was sleeping very comfortably back in April in those longs. Now my finger's on the trigger, and I'm watching it a lot closer. So.
Yeah. How do you manage the rest of your portfolio with that? Because we're talking about Bitcoin, but we also have been discussing this correlation. While Bitcoin looks like it's, you know, surviving, you know, in a similar range it's been in twice before, most altcoins are making lower lows and some of them all-time lows. So how are you even looking at the alts market in a market like this?
I'm being picky. When I'm picking up a coin, I make sure the fundamentals are there. You know, it's a team I know has done good work for a couple years. Or if it's a newer coin, a team I know has that staying power. Mm-hmm. Trying to grab ones where the market caps aren't overly inflated. A lot of the altcoins I've been buying lately are on the weekly chart, way down there on that support, or even a little below it. But the market caps are at something much more sustainable, like 10 mil or 20 mil.
Do you have any examples that I could pull up? But you'd be willing to be public about? You don't have to if you. I can pull up something random.
No, look at a monetary unit, Mew.
Oh yeah, yes.
So I know the team's good. Market cap's like 10 mil. I know they have developments coming up that are pretty big. I don't know when they're coming up, but presumably this year. So they have those bullish catalysts coming up ahead for them. I'm really comfortable with this buy here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, if we break below that, that would get really ugly really fast. But the previous chart, there's a lot of development that's happened, you know, back since we were, I don't know what price that was at, like, what, 70 Satoshi? And the market cap is such that I think holding this floor at a 10 million market cap is very sustainable. If this chart was a monetary unit and it was at 150 million market cap, I would not be nearly as comfortable that we would hold this floor.
Yeah, that gap back to its 2017 pump would be a lot scarier if the market cap was super high.
It'd be a lot. Take for okay, Dragon for instance.
Yeah.
I still have some Dragon.
I don't have it pulled up, but basically Dragon did a full retrace to around 6K sats. I've been watching this. I've never had a position in Dragon, but ever since I literally had my button on or my finger on the button for the ICO, didn't do it because the US thing worried me. Like they were allowing retail investors in the US to do the ICO, which I thought was a little odd. And so I didn't do it. And then, of course, it like, I think it 100x'd to its peak. Basically fully retraced. And I think where you're getting at, the market cap of Dragon is about 100 million right now.
Yeah. So it hasn't actually fully retraced because I think this is going to be rough, but I think they raised like 20 to 30 million in ICO.
It was like 8 or 9.
Oh, you're right. You're right. It was like 8 or 9. Yeah. So its chart looked really bad and it kept on dropping and dropping. And there were some nice support zones that one could have bought at. And actually, I think I got memed into buying it a couple of them. Thanks, Bully. but it has that, the market gap's still pretty high. And it's that high on a newer coin that, you know, just had, like you said, an $8 or $9 million ICO raise this past year. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as comfortable buying something like that as I am with something like monetary unit, which, yeah, maybe the charts look similar, but that lower market cap and the fact that it's already been around for multiple years, that gives me more confidence in that trade.
Yeah, with something like Dragon, one of the things I think about, and I have one where I got stuck on this, so I'll fess up, and it was on the SALT chart, where the chart fit what I was looking for. I've never liked the SALT fundamentals for various reasons. What stood out to me and what stands out with me on Dragon is even though it's low and it looks low, it looks cheap, there you always have some long-term holders where you haven't reached their floor yet. And therefore, it makes the catalyst moments change to me. So SALT had people that bought it at a quarter on the presale up to maybe a dollar. So there's some support around a buck for SALT. And on Dragon Chain, I don't remember what the price was. It was a few cents. But even though the chart looks bottomed out now, relative to what some of those ICO holders have their pricing at, it's still not bottomed. So like there's still room to go way down, in my opinion.
So I actually bought both Dragon and SALT, Dragon ICO and SALT at 25 cents. But SALT, the pricing tier, seemed so scammy to me.
Yeah,
I was like, this has to be a scam. But 25 cents, I mean, that's pretty compelling. So I didn't put a lot in. I put a little bit in, more, almost like a dice roll than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And Dragon, I guess I should have looked more into their fundamentals. I knew Joe from being in a couple chat rooms with him, and I liked him. He's a good guy. But I didn't put much in a Dragon either. And then both pulled ridiculous pumps from where my entries were.
Yeah. And I think these are good examples. And I've even given this advice before and then didn't follow it on this one, which was if you're going to bag hold something, it's better to bag hold something where you believe in its fundamentals.
Definitely. And, yeah.
Now I'm finding myself as a bag holder in a coin where I really don't get the fundamentals. So for my reasoning for SALT is because their retail product is priced like, I don't know, 15 times their coin price. So if someone just goes to an exchange and buys it, then they can theoretically use the SALT product for a far cheaper price than what it would cost through their retail application. And anyway, so like, I think that's why, and you're a technical trader, but you're a fundamental trader too. And is that, how has that helped you, I guess, over the years of trying to avoid stuff like this?
Yeah, I think it was Nick Patel who recently said this. He said, I'll never get into a coin solely because of fundamentals without looking at TA. He said, there are occasions where I'll get into a coin just off of TA.
Mm-hmm.
But never the reverse. And I'd say that's largely true for me as well. I'll trade some really crappy coins if I think the chart looks good and if I see people capitulating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's oversold. And there's some really good coins that I might like, but if the chart doesn't look right to me, I'm going to stay out of it. That said, if I end up bag holding that coin, like let's say I had more, I bought a bigger position than I could exit comfortably given the lack of buy support. It's a lot easier to hold that when you have confidence in the team or confidence in the product they're working on or confidence that the coin's going to reach some level of adoption or just that it's going to, you know, catch the eye of new money at some point later in time. Whatever fundamental reason you bought that coin for, it's a lot easier to stomach those drawdowns.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And
a really good example of that is ZRX.
Yeah.
I bought that, I don't know what it was, but it was before Ethfinex was mentioned.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about last year?
Yeah. So I started buying at like, I missed ICO because I'm pretty sure if I recall correctly, ICO got like bought out immediately or something.
Yeah, it was extremely hard. It was, I think they raised $20 million or $25 million, And yeah. I certainly didn't have an opportunity to partake in that, but I heard about it at the time of the ICO. So I actually bought it the first day on exchanges. It was at 4K sats. Anyway, continue on.
Okay. Yeah. So I missed ICO. It launched. I wanted to wait for it to bleed off for a while. This seemed much more of a longer term pump as developments roll in sort of coin. Mm-hmm. So I held off, and then I started buying pretty heavily around 2,500, 3K, I think. And yeah. So I didn't know where the bottom was, but I knew I wanted a largest position. So I started scaling in.
The bottom was 1,250.
Yeah, so I scaled it all the way down to like 1,800, and then my bag was filled. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I don't know where the bottom is, but I have my bag, and I know at some point Bitfinex is going to announce we are using 0x to launch Ethernex, because they'd mentioned it like once publicly, mm-hmm. and I think the market kind of forgot about it. and I knew the team was good, knew the coin was good, and at that point, the market cap was in that comfortable range for me. It was around 20 million or less. And so, yeah, we went down to 1,200 or 1,000, I think. But that didn't really bother me because I had my bag. I knew the fundamentals were solid and bullish catalysts were going to roll in. I knew the market cap was in a range I was comfortable with. So once I got my fills, I just waited and it paid off.
Yeah.
Whereas if I was buying that 3K floor on a coin where I didn't like the fundamentals of, I probably would have dumped when we broke 2K or something. So
yeah, because the other thing that you were doing there is, I mean, you lost 50% on it, but you were just patient to wait, and you were buying the entire way down. I was in a very, very, very similar position with ZRX. So I bought it at 4K sats on Liqui, and it actually went 4K to 12K, and then it bled. So it did what a lot of ICOs do. Another great example of one that's been doing that recently is Wanchain, where so it has an initial pump and then it bleeds. And then at least last year, there was another pump. And the first pump is actually not even on the ZRX charts. But relative to the dollar, what I paid a lot of attention to with ZRX is I even joked with Josh Ulswich one time, Carpe Noctum, on this podcast that I was like, I treat ZRX like my stable coin because it just was stuck at around a quarter to 30 cents. Like it was more stable than Tether to me. So I would literally just I would buy it or I would put stuff into it over time and just be fine with it because I agreed, like just the team was insane. And once it broke out of that was where I really knew it was paying off. And this is one of the few where I've, personally managed my risk better than, you know, I'd have on some coins because I've managed to catch both of the big moves on that one. And you're making a perfect point of the fundamentals because this is just one where you just know it has fundamental catalysts that are going to help it out.
I want to emphasize what I did. Sounds like kind of what you did on ZRX and actually Cobain. Crypto Cobain did the same thing. He's just started averaging into it. It's very different than just averaging down a bag, your bag holding for the sake of averaging down. In 2014, I bought Fluttercoin. I sold the top, felt like a god. And I bought even more than I'd sold, like 20% lower on a dip. Well, then it bled for the next like 4 months. And I kept on buying every support the whole way down because it's got to bounce, right? Well, it never did. That ended up with me being 90% in, 90% of my portfolio in a coin that I had absolutely zero confidence in and was down massively. I think I took actually, I'd worked my way up to 10 Bitcoins at the time and I think I exited finally with 2. It was a very hellish several months. I'm not suggesting people average down for the sake of averaging down. But with ZRX, I didn't have a price target. I had a fundamental event target. And I knew when this happens, the price is going to appreciate rapidly because of it. The market cap was in line with my risk management. I averaged in slowly, which was an aspect of risk management. And I bought in higher than I should have in retrospect. But everything lined up well. And then when I had my bag, I was comfortable waiting until that fundamental event happened.
Mm. Yeah. Same in terms of going too soon. I remember I got a decent number of coins at like 1400 sats, like relative to what I was paying for it prior. but in terms of a dollar basis, I was like, wow, I could have bought just an enormous bag of ZRX if I really waited on that bleed out. I think understanding patience in markets is so important. And that's where I want to get to now, is where we're in this season where it looks like a lot of alts have fully retraced, a lot of not. So ZRX right now, EOS is another, a lot of others where they had these fundamental catalysts. They had a pump or a second pump. April was a very few coins made new all-time highs in April, but some did, or May. Now what on a coin like this? Like, do you have this philosophy for when it's safe to buy some of these back, or are you looking for full retraces even on these coins with solid fundamentals?
Yeah, I'm not in ZRX right now. I'd be tempted if we went down to like that 10-11K range.
Mm-hmm.
That said, it could, I mean, looking off the chart in support, it wouldn't surprise me if we bounced from here, but I don't have enough confidence in it to get in. If we were in a bull market right now, like we were too early 2017, I would definitely buy this chart.
Yeah. You've got a 50% drawdown or whatever and buy it up.
Yeah, but we're not. And so I'm much more careful about my entries. And so, like, getting back to Mu, a monetary unit, I really like that chart. But
yeah,
what you said about being patient, everything's lining up for me to buy this coin right here. With that said, we're in a bear market. Stuff's bleeding off. I'm not buying my whole stack right now. I'm averaging in slowly. So if we end up going lower, fine. My average will be lower. And then when I have my stack, then I'll wait, because I don't think the crypto bubble has burst, so to speak. I think alts will have their day in the sun again. I think Bitcoin's going to have its day in the sun again. I don't think all alts are going to. There are some I think are going to keep on bleeding down to zero. I mean, if I looked at the coins I bought back in 14, 15, and even 16, I wouldn't recognize probably 75% of the tickers anymore. But when you're confident about the team, their staying power, when you're confident about their product or their blockchain, and market cap lines up, the chart lines up, that's when I'm comfortable starting to average in to longer term positions in this bear market. So
I'd like to take a quick break to thank Delta for being our partner for this episode. You can check out Delta at ledgerstatus.com/Delta. Hey, do you know what's in their latest release? They've got the My Delta Portfolio social sharing feature. So now you can create a custom URL for your portfolio, and it'll track everything that's in your portfolio now. It'll show your historical performance and all sorts of stuff. It's really cool. For the 100X challenge, if you go to at 100X Trading on Twitter, I've actually got the portfolio link in the profile, so that way you can always know what I'm invested in and see the performance of the trading challenge, even when it's not great like it is right now. But that's okay. That's what this is all part of. Delta is my favorite way to track my portfolio, and I think it will be your favorite way as well. They're always coming out with new releases and great features, and I'm really happy to have them on as a partner. And you can support Delta by using it for free and telling your friends. And then if you really like it, you can upgrade to Delta Pro for a small fee. Go to ledgerstatus.com/Delta to check it out and learn more. And thanks so much to Delta for being a Ledger Status partner. I want to touch briefly on ICOs. You've mentioned that you have bought some pre-sales, and that you in 2017, and I'm pretty sure in 2018 as well, have taken part in some ICO-based projects. Do you think that market has room in it still? I've seen a lot of mixed opinions. There's obviously a lot of regulatory stuff that could alter the market, but what's your take on coins that have used an ICO, or even if it wasn't a public sale, like a pre-sale, you know, style token funding mechanism?
Well, I think the SEC gave us some really nice breathing room when they acknowledged that a coin can start as a security and based off of, you know, its relation down the road can be viewed not as a security. And I'm not here to argue with Bitcoin maximalists or people who actually, you know, really study the technical aspects of these coins. I'm just here to try and earn a living for my family. I mean, that doesn't fuck anyone over, and where I don't get fucked over by the SEC. So I think ICOs still have some life left in them as a funding method. That said, I'm being a lot more careful with those as well. I was in a group today where someone brought in a pre-sale with $150 million raise for this tranche, and the whole raise was going to be worth like $1 billion. And wow. People laughed him out of the room. So I think it's good finally that people are maybe being a little more realistic with some of the sizes and some of the raises. I am being a lot pickier now. Once again, I mean, being in a bear market changes how you view everything, and there isn't a large stack of money on the side that's trying to get in all these ICOs. A lot of ICOs that have been launching lately have had pretty aggressive dumps on like IDEX or some of these decentralized exchanges. Mm-hmm. And part of that's, I mean, probably from lower price tiers. One of the things I don't like about ICOs is you don't always know, you know, the price people got in below you. But part of that also is people just want their money out. And they're worried about the SEC, or they realized, okay, all ICOs don't just go up like they were in early 2017. So, I mean, this is just where you have to do your due diligence and use good risk management. 2017 was an amazing time to have poor risk management and FOMO buy things. I mean, that was pretty much the best strategy, actually. I would have made a lot more money if I'd come into 2017 with my same stack of Bitcoin and no risk management. But because I had PTSD from 14, 15, 16, you know, I didn't quite make as much as I would have, but I'm fine with that because I'm still around and I have that sticking power that using good risk management and doing your own research gives you. So,
yeah. Do you have any strategies in terms of approaching how you're approaching 2018 from a correlation standpoint? Like, historically, we've seen the decorrelation happen at some point between Bitcoin and altcoins. And I feel like personally that we're going to see that again. Are you, is there anything in particular that you're doing to strategize either for that moment or just for trading for the rest of the year?
I'm focusing on those kind of coins I mentioned earlier where I'm comfortable with the market cap at this range. I like the chart. I like the team. And I like that there's a bullish catalyst coming up. Because even when alts and Bitcoin are correlated and Bitcoin dumps, you know, some of these lower market cap coins or the ones on DEXs that don't quite have that liquidity, they aren't really as affected. And so I'm comfortable building longer term positions in those. And then stuff like Decred. I really like Decred. Decred actually held up beautifully the past several weeks.
I have no idea why either. Decred's one of those ones where I paid a lot of attention and then just stopped. And I don't remember why I stopped paying attention. And now I wish I was all in on Decred for the last couple months. Do you want to touch on that from a fundamental perspective? Why you like a couple of the coins that you do? I know Decred and Ubic are two of your really long-term coins.
Yeah, so right now the bags that I'm not necessarily, you know, low caps that I'm still trying to accumulate, but ones that I'm really comfortable in the fundamentals and actually the charts are pretty solid, I think, are Decred, Ubic, and Consensus AI. And that gets down to pretty much on each of those three. I really like the teams. And Consensus AI is a newer coin, but I know it's been worked on for quite a while. Decred team's been around a while, and they have some amazing developers behind it. The Ubic team also has some really solid, scrappy developers. I like the ethos of both the Cred and Ubik as far as the teams go. Devs have shown themselves very capable. I think they both cut out a very nice niche for themselves in this market. So those are coins that I've been in Decred on and off. I capitulated on Decred at one point, which is to my own shame. But then I got back in.
Was that before the big 2017? Yes. Okay.
I capitulated by selling at a 2x.
Okay.
Which before that pump, that counts as sometimes the only way to shake people out is by pumping a little bit, and then they dump, and then you let it rip.
Hey, that is that's some serious wisdom that you just dropped, because I've been there. Actually, I did that on Twitter this year. I don't know if you trade equities, but I bag held Twitter for years and sold it on a break even, and now it's up like 40% on the year. So that is some fantastic advice that sometimes, once you get the pump that you've been waiting on forever, you might just want to continue your patience rather than embracing that escape mentality. So anyway, so Decred, you capitulated for a 2x and then got back in.
Yeah, I missed the whole run up to like 0.02. But I ended up getting back in, and I have more now than I did before I capitulated. So that's another one where I'm in it for a bullish catalyst, so to speak, more than a specific price target. I know they're working on privacy. I know the devs are world class. I'm really excited to see what they launch. From what I hear, it should be going live this year. So I personally think that'll take us to new all-time highs on Decred. If you look at the books, Decred's books are so thin. Liquidity actually really sucks on Decred. I think 50% of the coins are staking, which probably explains why liquidity is so bad.
Yeah, and staking on Decred is actually a harder lockup, right? Like, you can't just stop staking immediately with Decred, right?
Yeah, because you buy tickets.
That's right.
You have some skin in the game on the staking. Yeah, I think you can get your Decred out earlier, but it still takes a while, and you take a hit because you don't get that refund from the ticket.
Yeah, whereas with a lot of coins that are either staking or masternodes or whatever, you can essentially break your masternode in minutes and sell into a pump. So Decred really encourages holding in that regard.
Yeah.
So these are fundamental reasons why you mentioned those coins with your strategy this year. Are you doing a lot of TA on those, or are you really just waiting on the moment?
So usually with coins that I like fundamentally and longer term, for instance, Ubik and Decred, I have a stack that's more of my long-term accumulation bag. And then I also have a stack that I swing trade with.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought a bunch of Decred. I can check my Twitter. I tweeted about it maybe about a month ago when it was at 900K Satoshi, I think, 0.009. It pumped, and then it did a full retrace of the pump. And so I mentioned buying heavily there, and that was like with my swing bag. And then I took that off the table. Right there. I bought a bunch at below 0.009. Mm. And then I sold that for like a 30% bounce,
which was this incredible wick.
Yeah. So I think that also helps me as far as mentally with some of these coins. Previously when I sold the Cred back in 2017 for that 2x, I fully intended to get back in, but I was like, oh, well, it bounced 2x. I'll sell here. I'll buy back when we retrace 25%. And then, as you know, it just ripped like crazy. So I have kind of like I do with Bitcoin, actually. I have my longer term cold wallet, and I continue to add to that from profits. But then I then do shorter term trading as well, swing trading on these coins.
Yeah, I think that's really smart. And it also, what you mentioned about the mentality, I think is a really great point. And that's actually something I asked you about recently. I'll fess up to that. So I obviously am new, and I seek out advice from people that have been around longer than me. And I asked you about YUBIC for the same reason, because, you know, I like YUBIC for the fundamental reasons as well. And I've actually traded a disturbingly small percentage of my YUBIC position. I've basically held it ever since I bought it the first time around, which was unfortunately not before the huge pump. But again, like with ZRX, I averaged in once it did a nice retrace and then all the way back down. So my average price isn't awful. But when we had this the snapshot thing recently for the Escher airdrop, I actually didn't sell any. I just was like, okay, you know, just a thing that happened, and now I'm going to wait. And I realized pretty quickly afterwards, I was like, wow, that was really stupid. Like I should have broken this up and had some for the longer term position, but also traded it when I knew perfectly that the trading catalyst was the type of thing that should cause some form of dump. So like, I think you make a fantastic point of being able to balance those things. Do you have a magic percentage, or do you approach it with things like long-term capital gains in mind when you're making those decisions?
Yeah, I don't have a percentage on it because the amount of coins I have for my swing trading is going to depend. The size of that trade is going to depend on the liquidity at that time in the market. Whereas the size of my holdings for long term, I don't really worry so much about the liquidity. Like for instance, I mean Consensus, it's on a DEX.
Yeah.
I don't know what the buy support is, but I doubt it's very much.
It's not. I own this one too. I don't think you could put like 5 Ethereum on a market order and not move the price, you know?
I can't exit Sin Consensus here, but I'm not buying my current bag with the idea of exiting here. I plan to slowly exit, you know, in the next couple of years as the mainnet rolls out and the coin, you know, catches more of the public attention. Whereas if I'm same with YUBIC, I have a considerable position in YUBIC. I don't look at that the same way as far as liquidity goes, because I have no intention of exiting that bag here. Mm-hmm. If I'm buying same YUBIC for a quick, I think it's going to bounce 25, 30, 50%, then I'll look at the market conditions, see what the buy support's like, see how much the market can stomach me, you know, scalping on a trade or something. So
That's really interesting. And I assume all of this, you have to stomach. You mentioned earlier when you're feeding your family and this is your job, like you have to be able to still stomach wins and losses, and you have days where you lose money or weeks where you, or maybe months where you lose money, and this is your job. So is there anything specific that you do from a passive income perspective, or like maintaining residual income? Do you do any significant amounts of staking or masternodes or any of that kind of stuff?
So I do, I stake to cred. Which is actually pretty profitable. I think it's like 20% a year.
Oh, nice.
And then I do some like lending, P2P lending with fiat, because this is my job, and I just had my first kid as well. So even thinking longer term, you know, because of her, I probably have more, regardless of market conditions. I have a bigger percentage in fiat than probably most crypto traders. Definitely more than I did when I was doing this part-time, because I had that job that was covering all my fiat needs, so I could really stomach those drawdowns. Now I cash some out every month, pretty much regardless of the price. Actually, I just kind of view it as my income, more for my wife than anything. She likes seeing that steady influx of income.
I
still scalp. So even if like I have longer term positions that aren't doing much, I still scalp every week on BitMEX. So I have that monthly income regardless. So as a rule, most of that, usually about half of my BitMEX scalping profits, I'll cash out to USD regardless of the price. And then the rest I'll use to top off my trading fund.
So from a percentage standpoint, do you remember Crypto Cobain's pyramid thing where he talked about percentages that he applies to something? Do you generally endorse something like that, where your high risk plays, you know, is in that 5 to 25% of your portfolio side of things, and you are willing to have up to a third or even 50% in either fiat or lower what is that called? Interest programs like lending Bitcoin or lending fiat.
Yeah, I think it's very, I don't have as pyramid ahead of me and in front of me, but I think it's very important to have that, to keep that in mind always, because there was a while back in 2017, I realized like 75% of my crypto portfolio, it wasn't all in Ethereum, because I was using my risk management, you know, like how, what percentage I put in this coin or that coin or this position, but it was in Ethereum-based ICOs, which still has that fundamental, it's still built on that foundation of Ethereum. So 75% of my portfolio was all in on Ethereum not being boned by the SEC, basically.
Yeah.
Which I didn't think they would be, but I realized that was atrocious risk management. So when you have that larger picture in front of you, you know, this percentage in this kind of market segment, you know, large caps, small caps, high risk, or even like different industries. I think one of the questions on Twitter is about this, different industries as far as like crypto gambling or crypto platforms or utility tokens, that sort of thing.
That's our buddy J40. He's a fellow UBIT community member with us.
Yes, yes. so I think that's important to keep in mind as well. I know there's some people, I think Nitocoin does this, probably not so fast as well. They have the crypto market mapped out into like the 20, I'm making that number up, but like several dozen or whatever segments of specific sub-industries within crypto.
Mm-hmm.
And they have specific, like a mainstream coin in that category, and then more of like a dark horse play as well. Mm. And I think that's great for them. I mean, I don't have anything against that at all. I definitely don't think it's a bad way to do it. It's not how I trade. I don't really view it. I don't really view my portfolio, I guess, as a portfolio, so to speak, of covering all these different sections. I just look for good setups. And yeah. I try and make sure, you know, kind of with that Cobain pyramid you mentioned, making sure they're not all bearing the same risk. So I have them in different kinds of altcoins, you know, not all on Ethereum tokens. I keep fiat out of that to help balance my risk, that sort of thing.
Cool. Yeah, I actually completely agree with you. And I see where they're coming from. And I think there's actually going to be a day maybe in crypto where that'll really make a lot of sense. The biggest reason it doesn't to me now is because I treat my broader investment portfolio where crypto is one of those, you know, like, yeah, but with, okay, within crypto, I don't necessarily, but for me, like I'm not 100% crypto. So like I have money in stocks and retirement and, you know, other types of assets. So,
well, frankly, I don't want to work as hard as Nitocoin does.
Yeah, that too.
That man works so hard. He's like one of the hardest working traders I know. And he's definitely reaped the gains of that. But I just want to hang out with my daughter and make enough money to do cool things with her. So cover the bills.
Cool, man. Well, we went a little bit different direction with this interview than I thought we might, but I'm glad we did. It felt like a fun higher level chat and a lot of fundamentals talk, which I'm excited about. Do you have, just to leave us with, and we'll get off long interview, but I think people will like it. Do you have a favorite thing that you watch in terms of a technical analysis tool?
No, I will not as far as like indicators go. I know
I've heard that you're a chart wizard, but I really don't see a lot of Sicarius charts these days.
I don't consider myself a chart wizard at all. I use no indicators. I know there's value to them. Actually, Colin Crypto runs Gambit. Mm-hmm. He developed a really good suite of kind of complementary, mm-hmm, higher time frame indicators in TradingView. And it's always been on my to-do list to sit down and work through that and learn that. But life's busy, especially now with the baby. So I actually only use horizontal resistance and support, and then my overview of the market sentiment at the moment on each coin. So
imagine candle structure as a part of that, at least.
Yeah,
in terms of price,
definitely. yeah, definitely candle structure and just like you said, price action. So I don't have like a go-to indicator.
Cool. Well, I think people will be encouraged to hear that. You've obviously done well for yourself over the years, and it sounds like you're going to be here for a while. So
that's the goal.
I look forward to talking to you again someday, and thanks for educating everyone on the show today. If people want to keep track of what you're doing, I imagine that Twitter is the best place to do that, so they can follow you at Sicarius with an underscore on the end, and all of this will be linked up. I have no idea what it was there that you've got the tweeted last, but we'll go with that.
It's about pre-sales. All right.
Okay. Congratulations on your new family, and best of luck to you getting through a bear market. Look forward to coming out the other side.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You as well, man. Thanks.
All right, have a good one. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight, I can barely